From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Patrick Hoskin, in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on June 7th, 2024. That's when the English pop star Charlie XCX released her sixth album called Brat on Atlantic Records. It was a big musical moment, garnering critical acclaim and commercial success, and it reached number three on the Billboard 100, actually it's the Billboard 200 albums chart. 100 is the, yeah, anyway. But the album's cultural impact was far greater than its musical achievements. Its hedonistic and edgy joie de vivre ushered in what came to be known as Brat Summer, a mostly online phenomenon that probably began even earlier in the springtime. And before long, Brat Summer, with its lime green minimalist color scheme, was being utilized by all sorts of social media users, including, inevitably, the marketers. Could it survive being co-opted by brand executives who would keel over from one whiff, writer Ariel Gordon wrote in an essay for the music website Pitchfork? Or would it, like so many other online phenomena that broke free of the cloisters of the internet, shrivel and die in the real world like a string of hosta flowers wilting in a heat wave? Well, then Charlie herself weighed in, tweeting, "Kamala is brat," on July 21st, shortly after Joe Biden withdrew from the 2024 presidential election. And the Harris-Waltz campaign quickly seized on the opportunity, even adopting Brat Summer aesthetics to help boost its rush of popularity. NATO and Deutsche Bank posted about Brat Summer inevitably. But just 4 days ago, Charlie tweeted, "Goodbye forever, Brat Summer," signaling the moment's official end. So that's a lot of history, but I feel like it's essential to include in this hour. Here in Rochester, Brat Summer may continue well into the fall. On November 15th, Photo City Music Hall will host a Club Brat Charlie XCX-themed night. And before that, just over a week from now, Essex on University Ave will throw its own Club XCX night. That's on September 14th. We are here to talk about all things Brat Summer. And joining us to do that are Andrew Natoli and Riley Fressi, the owners of Upstate Music Group and the talent buyers at Essex. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Ariel Gordon, who wrote that essay, "Brat Summer is Dead, Long Live Brat Summer," which was for the music website Pitchfork. Ariel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So that's, yeah, I said a lot of things up front, by the way, and I feel like I may have scared some people away, so I apologize for that. But there's, I feel like I didn't even cover as much ground as I probably could have, probably because I feel like elements of Brat Summer are, maybe to use an acronym, NSFW for this particular radio medium. But I do want to ask you, Ariel, maybe I'll start with you. Why do you think Brat Summer became as big a phenomenon as it did? I mean, we're talking about online tastemakers maybe having a very large influence. Maybe it was a right place, right time thing. But when you think about a pop star releasing an album, a pop star who's not necessarily up to like Taylor Swift levels, and then having, you know, NATO tweet about that meme that kind of inspired, what do you think, how do you think that became so big? Maybe we can start there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, NATO tweeting peace in the blurry font and the green color that Brat album is made up in, it was really a surprise. But I think it felt like this album cycle was really generated by fans, in contrast to maybe Charlie XCX's previous album cycle for 2022's album Crash, which really felt like driven from the top down by Atlantic Records. This record from the beginning was promoted via much more intimate settings, such as the Boiler Room series, which is an online broadcasting dance club, basically, and as well as Brooklyn's Lot Radio. So it just felt a lot more intimate. In terms of its commercial appeal, I think simply memes that the simpler the meme, the catchier it is. And in this case, there you have to do so little for your meme to be grouped in with Brat. It's really just the color and the font, and you can kind of do whatever you want with it. So I think its simplicity begot its ubiquity in this case. But I also think that this album speaks to, some say it's a revolt against what many have called the clean girl aesthetic, but to me, it's a self-referential, warts and all approach to being a celebrity. So it's like uglier feelings, jealousy, and not just the kind of positive aspects. And I think that was really a welcome change in the pop landscape.
Yeah, and that's very interesting because we talk a lot about celebrity sort of from a monocultural standpoint. You mentioned this sort of more organic feel generated by fans at these more intimate endeavors in terms of live music or club nights. So that's obviously why I kind of want to bring you guys in, Andrew and Riley. I definitely want to bring you into the fold and talk a little bit about that Essex show. Just quickly first, before we do that, I also don't want to overlook like the actual music. I feel like that's something that's interestingly gets somewhat sidelined. Charlie's album Brat is quite good. It's sort of got a lot of these like club ready songs, pop songs, very good for, yeah, having a night out. Do you think, Ariel, do you think the music itself is central to the wide appeal, or is it more about the memes? Because I'm always curious how those kind of like online first phenomena happen when we're talking about meme and culture versus what the actual music sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I think in this case, it was a bit of both. So, you know, you talked about the Harris HQ adopting Brat Summer, but that was, you know, when the official announcement came July 21st. But starting in late June, early July, there were video like memes on TikTok that had interpolated Kamala's speeches into the closing song on the album 365, which is just a really fun, bouncy song that, as you said, is very NSFW in its content. But I think because of its many layers and interpolations, it's even referencing the album itself. It's easy to jump in with a supercut of Kamala saying, you know, you didn't fall out of a coconut tree. And so I do think the music had to be good in order for this to sustain. But I agree that, you know, it's much easier to meme something that's just a font versus if Charlie had gone with an album cover with her face on it, you know, it's much harder to make that work for, you know, let's say your G Train or whatever meme format you want to do.
Sure. So. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And so, yeah. So like I mentioned here in Rochester, we don't have Charlie XCX coming to play here, but we do have these club nights. One of them is happening at Essex. It's Club XCX. It's happening Saturday, September 14th. It's at 9 PM. It's an 18 and over event. Maybe Andrew and Riley, you guys booked the show. Can you talk a little bit about just the event in general? We can talk a little bit about more about why, but maybe just give an overview of what folks, if they are like, oh, I want to go check this out, what can they expect?
Absolutely. So the event was just appealing for us to book just because we are big fans of the underground, like house scene or dance music. And we wanted to kind of bring that boiler room vibe to Rochester because there aren't many venues that are doing those types of events in Rochester. So as soon as we got the event or the availability for the event, we wanted to capitalize on it just because of the momentum that Brett has had throughout the summer. And we wanted to bring the community together to celebrate the music of Charlie XCX.
And it does also feel, I mean, I know she's on tour. I think she's touring with Troye Sivan. I think she's doing like arena shows, but like you're not going to get necessarily the same experience seeing her at an arena show than you would get at a more intimate club show, kind of to that point about hearing this music in that kind of boiler room club setting, right?
Right. I think it's about that, the feeling of it, right? And you don't necessarily need to have Charlie right there to experience that, because I think, you know, especially after reading Ariel's her write-up in Pitchfork, that made it more apparent to me too that it's more about the feeling that's being shared. It's almost like this inside kind of feeling that, you know, confuses a lot of people with the like the green font. What is this? Seems so basic, and what does Brat mean? That the whole point of this conversation is trying to dig more into that. And I think that the people in the know, like, that's what's kind of cool about it, is mm-hmm. like those that are there are in that know. And to be able to bring that is really cool because, you don't need the artist there. It's the community feeling that we're in the know kind of deal. It's fun to deliver, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting that there are two happening just in the span of the fall like that. I feel like that really does speak to how widespread and how it's obviously though Charlie herself tweeted that Brat Summer is officially over. I feel like its legacy lives on, you know, much to Ariel's her essay title, but
the feeling does at least.
Right. And so that's an interesting thing too. Like I think so. So a little bit of detail from the event blurb. It's obviously like a club night. We're talking about Charlie XCX music, Arca, Slater, Shy Girl, Sophie, 100 Gex. So a lot of these hyper pop artists, a lot of like club ready stuff. What were some of the factors? I mean, you mentioned wanting to kind of capture that spirit, have that. What are some of the other factors about booking that show and about, I don't know, like, have you just conversations that you'd had with folks? Did you feel like there was an appetite for that?
We do. I think that's what's fun about what Andrew and I get to do with Upstate and now via Essex, is that all of our friends live here. Like, all of our friends are our friends because we met them at a concert. So I would go as far to say that we do have a finger on the pulse of what's wanted. You know what I mean? And, you know, Brat Summer in and of itself, it may not necessarily be for Andrew and I, right? Like, it's clearly about, you know, kind of stepping outside of the norm. There's a strong women empowerment aspect to it, which Andrew and I are completely behind. Whether or not we experience that ourselves, we can deliver that, you know, and that's what's important to us. Mm-hmm. Is like, it's not about mine or Andrew's musical taste or our beliefs or any of that. It's about what's lacking in the community. And what does the community deserve, and can we bring it, even if it's not for us?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And to be able to bring that is important to us.
And I think there's also something to be said about like Rochester being, for example, not Brooklyn, right? And like, where there might be some hyper accelerated culture happening, or just in terms of the lifespan of trends, or different things that, whether that's a musical trend or any kind of cultural thing, in New York and in larger hubs, those things are more accelerated than they are here. So here, you know, for example, we're talking about this show coming up at Essex is in September. It's about a week from now. We have the Photo City show happening in November. The momentum, it doesn't have to feel in the same way. Whereas Ariel, you were saying, you know, a lot of what was driving the initial Brat Summer stuff was a lot of stuff that was happening, certainly locally, like in different pop-ups that are happening in Brooklyn. So there's kind of an interesting thing there too, where just because, like, so for example, like I saw a lawn sign around here. Someone had a Kamala Harris lawn sign, but it was the Brat album cover. It just said Kamala in all lowercase. And I was like, yeah, so that's, I think that's where we're at a little bit. Like, as soon as I feel like, and this is what you sort of mentioned in your essay, Ariel, you know, which you published just a couple of days after she tweeted Kamala is Brat. The official end of Brat Summer, kind of as you see it, was well before the seasons changed. And we're talking about an essay that's like a month and a half-ish old now, but it kind of already feels like so much has happened since then. Do you feel that way too?
Yeah, well, I'm questioning myself if Brat Summer's over, in that, you know, Charlie has teased more remixes to come on her album, which I think is always a way to prolong an album's cycle. And she's successfully done that with the Billie Eilish remix of already a additional bonus song, Guess. And I think to the political point, 365 ended up on Barack Obama's song list.
Right.
And just yesterday, I believe, or 2 days ago, he was interviewed about whether he listens to the songs on his list. And he said, yes, he does. And he said, Charlie XCX, quote, knows what she's doing. So I think that this kind of overlap, as you said, you know, might have marked the death knell for people in, let's say, the Charlie XCX subreddit, or, you know, maybe people more at the forefront of culture. But I think the fact that it's had such lasting power in such an unexpected way speaks to both the strength of the music and also Charlie's embracing of a kind of political Brat, you know, which is unusual for her. She's not a pop star who's making a lot of political statements. So when she tweeted, you know, expressly in support of, you know, Kamala's campaign, that was also a kind of sea change for her.
I appreciate that. And this actually is probably a really good opportunity. We had Bob from Rochester off air actually wanted to know, and perhaps we should have defined this at the top of the show, but what does Brat actually mean? Maybe, Ariel, can you tackle that one? Now it's become this sort of amorphous concept, right? But when you actually listen to the music, there's a lot of behaviors, there's a lot of like sort of identity that would be wrapped up in maybe what that would convey. But to the best of your understanding, Ariel, can you maybe break that down?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. So, you know, Brat really, I think, is a mix of hedonism and kind of haphazardness, messiness. There's an unplanned nature to a lot of this, so the last minute nature to a lot of these kind of campaigns she's been doing. And I also think that, you know, at this point, Brat has taken on this connotation of maybe being a bit more, let's say, self-aware about, you know, your own shortcomings. So there's a degree of Brat that I think is maybe a bit more self-referential and self-aware than just your typical pop album. And I guess the last thing I'll say is I think Brat is about not being afraid to be divisive. I think that, you know, there's a self-confidence in releasing an album as a pop star with, once again, without your face on it and just saying, you're going to buy this because the music's good. And I know that.
Yeah, it's a very personality forward concept without the personality being like the celebrity, I guess, is maybe how that's kind of how I've understood it too. And like to the point where your essay ends with Jake Tapper asking on CNN, is the idea that we're all kind of Brat? And you write, not anymore, Jake, but for a brief moment, it seemed like we all could be. Which is a great ending. But what is that, because inevitably what happens with these online forward or online propelled phenomena, is that because the eventual endpoint of something that's usually so successful is, for example, social media marketers or different organizations like Deutsche Bank, like NATO, even the United States Postal Service recently tweeted that mailing mercury is not Brat. Is that sort of the eventual endpoint of something that kind of ends up having this moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of comparisons. I was thinking during when I was preparing for this about similar political co-opting of songs, but usually it happens from such a top-down place. You know, I think about "Roar" by Katy Perry being the song of the Clinton campaign. That felt so intentional. And that's why I feel like it was so short-lived, because it didn't feel organic. But I do think that the strength of Brat has proven to be that Charlie has organically built up this fan base. And so it's harder for, let's say, one Deutsche Bank post. It actually makes, I think, you know, the Deutsche Bank social media team seem a bit, let's say, off the mark. And then, you know, it doesn't necessarily damage the overall brand, sure. But certainly it does, you know, it has the oversaturation can, of course, kill something that's meant to be kind of fundamentally underground. So there's an element of that too.
Yeah. The underground, that's great. Cause that's initially something that came up, beginning when we were talking about this, Andrew and Riley, you mentioned when we were emailing about this, you know, and you sort of said this before, you appreciate Charlie's music. Your motivation for booking the show was bringing the community together to celebrate life amidst, you know, the issues people face. There seems to be a very, we're going to book the show, people are going to come have fun kind of vibe to that. Is that, can you talk a little bit more about that? And is kind of that your, is that a central factor in terms of your approach to as talent buyers and the folks that run venues, or is that just more specific for this show, or how do you kind of see that?
So I'm going to let Andrew kind of jump into it, but before I do that, it's funny because Charlie has been around for a while,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, as we have said, this is the sixth album, and when you ask about what our process is in talent buying and all that, Andrew has probably been listening to Charlie for years and I didn't even notice, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's just something that has been a staple in this, in dance music, in club music, right? And so I remember a night when we had a bunch of friends over and Andrew, or one of the friends, had put on one of the tunes from Brat. And I was like, Andrew, we should see if there's something with this. And Andrew was like, yeah, dude, I've been listening to this for years and you haven't been paying any attention. So the point is that I look to Andrew, because Andrew does have that finger on the pulse even before it was what the phenomena that it is now, right? So now I'm going to let Andrew kind of go over more in that talent buying. But it's just funny that, you know, if Andrew suggests it, I'm going to hear it from someone else in a year or two. So
yeah.
And I think part of what makes our job fun is to get outside of our comfort zone of what we listen to or feel comfortable in. Because believe me, there's plenty of shows that I've booked of bands that I love that don't do as well that I might think they were. Like, I'm kind of skewed by the fact that, like, I love the music so much that, you know. But so it's fun to kind of, like, have your finger on the pulse of, like, what everybody else is into. And when you listen to Brett, it's... The music is kind of timeless, you know, like it could have come out 20 years ago or it could come out 20 years from now. Like, I think when you're in terms of like Brat Summer being over, like maybe the initial phenomenon is over for the summer that it came out. But the music's going to live on for years beyond this. And, you know, I just think I love this line of work because I love seeing like the community get excited about an event that wouldn't typically be in Rochester.
Mm. Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. Like, what do you think it reveals about, and like, to your understanding, what have you kind of gleaned about our market here? And that's an interesting thing, too, to talk about, right? Like, this show is going to be enjoyed by a lot of people. It's going to be fun. What does that maybe tell you about, maybe future opportunities or folks' opportunities in the market here?
I think that the Rochester music scene is hungry. And there's a lot of talent that's here, and there's a lot of talent outside of here that is making genuine efforts to come to Rochester. I think that larger agents are seeing the importance of this spot and this stop along any potential tour. Its proximity to Toronto, its proximity to New York City. And there's always this like Buffalo Rochester thing where I feel like Rochester for a long time has been overlooked. But recently, due to a lot of the talent buyers that are coming in here, I think that that is expanding for the agents. And I think that the listeners and the consumers of music in Rochester are looking for not necessarily something new, but something more substantial. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, with things like Lilac Festival, Lilac this year was amazing with the amount of national touring acts that came through.
Right.
And, you know, I just like the next guy, I love a good tribute band. I love a good cover band. That's great. And they're going to be in every city across the country.
Sure.
Like, and that's great. But I think that this audience is hungry for that originality. You know what I mean? And we saw that with Lilac, and we're seeing it with a lot of the shows we book. Now, Andrew and I will try and grab something that's original, and it's still a struggle sometimes to get people to go out to events like this. Like back in the day, it was when there was, you know, no phones and internet, it was like what clubs are having shows, and, mm-hmm. and a lot of people were introduced to music via just going out and doing it. Now, Andrew and I have an extra job in bringing awareness to it, and we thank you guys for allowing us to bring awareness to the Brat show that we've got coming out. So that hunger is there, and we are allowed to now get a little bit more creative with what we want to bring. And when we see responses like this Charlie XCX show, it gives us more confidence to kind of go more out there and be a little more Brat ourselves, I guess.
Mm, there yeah. we go. Yeah, I like that. Picking up the motivation.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to talk about Essex as the venue for this because just, you know, the space, I believe it was a yoga studio at one point. Like mm-hmm. now it's been converted to opened at some point in 2023. So really not that long ago, but an interesting use of space. A very like wide venue as opposed to a narrow and long venue. I don't know. Like there's, it's interesting. It's a very interesting place, I think, to, for more sort of to use this phrase, to turn it into kind of that club mentality. And I think that's kind of a really interesting sort of transformation, especially given a lot of, because some of the other, you want to just run through quickly some of the other upcoming shows there. I mean, it kind of runs the gamut. It's interesting to think about having a Brat themed club night, as well as like there's like Royal Otis is playing there in very soon, I think, mm-hmm. in the next yeah. couple of days.
Early this week.
Yeah. Other bands 10th. Coming through. Yeah.
yeah. And that show's sold out. We have like, we're starting to do like silent discos over there, more like the club nights. We have only been talent buying for Essex since July, so it is a new position or a new venue for us to represent. There's plenty of shows that are coming up that I can't talk about that we haven't announced yet that we're sure. really excited about. And there's other like college events and like you know, Essex opened in October, so there's still plenty of people in the city that have yet to go. Mm-hmm. So we're excited for the opportunity to kind of like open new doors for in to have another place where people can go on a weekend and enjoy, you know, a really nice atmosphere. They're owned by SCN, who, you know, runs all the restaurant. It's a hospitality mm-hmm. company in Rochester. So that vibe is definitely there. And we're just excited to kind of bring new people that haven't been there before and experience live music.
Yeah. And I should also mention Upstate Music Group books as well as at Flower City Station. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you talked about the Lilac Festival live music programming as well. So you guys are busy.
Yeah, the programming was done by Dave Drago, who is over also at Nazareth. He booked all of Lilac Festival, an honor working with him. And he kind of handed us the torch from Essex, which is cool. Which is cool that this is a community that we can do that, right? That we can work together and then and go into different capacities. And that's what we're most excited about with Essex, is that there are no like preconceived notions of this venue, right? Mm-hmm. Like when Andrew and I first started our talent buying careers, we started at Water Street. And we were at Water Street for about 5 years. And there were a lot of preconceived notions about that venue. Like there was a lot of uphill battles that we needed to face and overcome in order to get people more comfortable going there and to get the agents more comfortable coming back. And I feel we're very successful. It's one of my proudest achievements was what we did with Water Street. And so now to be able to go in and do this at Essex without any of that and being able to kind of start it fresh with a great team, like just a super supportive team, is one of the best feelings we've had so far.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, with that in mind, let's take just a quick break. We'll talk a little bit more about Brat Summer into Brat Fall, including its, as we sort of mentioned, its possible impact on the 2024 presidential election. We're talking about Brat Summer here on Connections. We'll continue that conversation right after this.
I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, as part of NPR's Climate Week, we're talking composting in our first hour. In our second hour, we're talking about a disease that is often misunderstood, prostate cancer. And in particular, we're talking about a new film and the impact on black men. Talk with you Monday on Connections.
Welcome back to Connections here on WXXI News. I'm Patrick Hoskin in for Evan Dawson. We've been talking about all things Brat Summer, filtered through the Charlie XCX filter, as well as many other wide-ranging topics as we've been getting to. We've been joined by Upstate Music Group owners Andrew Natoli and Riley Fressy, and we have music writer Ariel Gordon on the phone. Ariel, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned a couple of these events, these sort of like more intimate Brat-themed nights. Have you been able to be in that environment? And if so, like, could you maybe describe that? And also, just out of curiosity, have you ever seen Charlie perform, and what is that vibe? I just want to, now that I have you, I'm curious to maybe we can lay the foundation for that.
Well, first, I thought you were going to say about Essex that it's kismet, because Charlie XCX actually hails from Essex in England.
Oh my gosh!
And
wow.
So
it is kismet, you know, then.
Good call.
That connection felt too perfect to me, but yeah, I've seen Charlie live twice. And both times, I think she brought a really different performance because it was a different album cycle. So I saw her once on the, I believe it was Pop 2 album cycle, playing at a really small club. I will say it was, honestly, the Angels were really nice. The Angels are what we call, Charlie calls her fans.
Right, Charlie's Angels, yes.
Yeah. So it was a really, like, for me at least, it was a really wholesome experience. It was a very collective experience. And she brought her producer at the time, A.G. Cook, who still produced along with Easy Fun, a lot of her music on Brat, onto the stage with her. And so I think something that Charlie also does pretty consistently is kind of peel back the curtain on the production of pop music and like allow the fans to see, hey, I'm not just doing this alone. I have a team, and this is very intentional. So that's just me seeing her live. And in terms of Brat events in New York City, I stopped by Market Hotel, which is a nightclub in Bushwick, Brooklyn, has been having a series of brat nights, and they've been really fun. It's definitely been a really nice experience, as you said, because even living downstate, Charlie played, I think, 3 shows total to promote Brat, 1 in New York, 1 in LA, 1 in Chicago. So just missed Rochester. But even those were, if you can imagine, a really hot ticket. And not everyone who wanted to see her perform these songs could see her, because I think by the time she goes on her arena tour with, as you said, Troye Sivan, but she'll be playing a wider collection from her back catalog. And so for even, you know, people living in Brooklyn who couldn't get the hot ticket, it's been really nice to be able to hear these, as you know, you were saying, on a great sound system in an intimate environment. So it's better than just listening on, you know, your JBL Bluetooth speaker or something. And
sure,
you get to feel more of aliveness. And, you know, Market Hotel, to their credit, is really cornered the market in Brooklyn, as far as I'm aware. And they've just announced they're doing a Welcome to Brat Fall event.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
And they've changed the green to a sort of warm yellow orange. So I don't know what to make of that, but it's still going on there.
A more autumnal color scheme, of course.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting, because so it sounds like then it's not just necessarily a slightly smaller markets. Then it does seem like, though, the declarations that Brat Summer, maybe as it was originally known or originally experienced, maybe that part is sort of has been laid to rest. But the energy here down in Brooklyn, I'm sure in many different places, is going to continue on. So that's kind of an interesting development, I guess, especially because, right, like, we're talking about an album that came out at this point not even 3 months ago. We're talking about an artist who's gearing up for, you know, larger shows. So it is natural that momentum kind of keeps going into the fall and perhaps beyond. So that'll be interesting. I mentioned this before, but like, looking at the United States Postal Service tweeting about Brat, NATO, the lawn sign, like, are we at cultural saturation, or are we past that? Or I don't know. I mean, I guess I want to ask you this, Ariel, because you know we're talking about the essay that you published on July, I think, 24th. So from that perspective versus a September 6th perspective, where do you think we're at in that, in the life cycle?
Well, you know, I think now Brat is no longer, I think it started as a meme, which often starts as kind of like an inside joke almost. And so now I've seen, you know, a kind of reclaiming of Brat by the original fans, just by listening to the album a bunch to get it to continue having it chart. I think kind of what we were saying earlier, that the music is the reason that even though the Brat aesthetic itself, I think, has certainly reached cultural saturation. I think, you know, actually, I've heard friends who are or work with brand managers say that it's been brought up in meetings and they have to be talked down because it'll look like, you know, too late if you post a Brat meme now.
Sure.
But, you know, it got nominated for a Mercury Prize. I believe it's her first album to have that, that nomination. And so that's not speaking to the viral marketing, that's speaking to the content of the album. And I really do think it's a breath of fresh air. I mean, I said this a bit earlier, but in contrast to a lot of these more therapy speak albums we're seeing, I think Brat stands alone, and it does feel very of this moment, but also timeless, as you were saying, because of its refusal to engage in kind of this self-care rhetoric that has taken over a couple of different album cycles. I'm, you know, thinking specifically of Kacey Musgraves, but others. I think Brat is always going to be fun to listen to on a baseline, and that's what's keeping it alive even after the last, you know, Chase Bank meme drops.
Right, totally. And I, and like, even as I was putting these together, I was like, Yeah, I feel like I missed a bunch. Like, it's just hard to keep. It's like just trying to keep up with like who's tweeting about Brat now. I'm like, I feel like, and then, yeah, like the Obama thing. I was like, man, I totally missed that. That happened like a day or two ago. So, appreciate you being on the case. Yeah, we're talking all things Brat Summer here on Connections. You can feel free to join the conversation. The number is 844-295-8255. That's toll free. The local number is 585-263-9994. Or you can email connections at WXXI.org. I just wanted to also say a little bit like, yeah, and this has kind of been brought up, but like, yeah, it bears repeating that like Charlie XCX is not a new artist by any stretch of the imagination. She like arguably had her real sort of breakthrough. I mean, this, I guess you could consider this her breakthrough, but maybe her first like, you know, shot at the, or like appearance in the mainstream was like about 10 years ago now. She's lived many different lives as sort of an experimental pop artist. In the meantime, when she comes out with this, it does feel like she's capturing a moment, or maybe even to a certain degree creating the moment. So it's interesting, like as talent buyers from Andrew and Riley, from your perspective, when you see that, do you look for that quality maybe in other artists? Or I mean, a lot of who you get probably a fairly solid balance of artists that you're booking who are maybe sort of at the beginning of their career, but then also, I don't know, like you said, there's a lot that's going on behind the scenes that you're probably trying to lock into play now that perhaps will be announced in the near future. But what's the calculus a little bit for what makes a good show that you want to line up at one of these venues? I imagine at least a large portion of that is logistics, right, which is kind of out of your control. But apart from that, is there some kind of thing in balancing your personal taste, as you mentioned, with what you think might serve the community really well?
Yeah. So marketing, especially for Brat, is like so pivotal for why this show is appealing, because it seems so unintentional while completely being 100% intentional. And it's causing waves that go way beyond just like an artist releasing an album. And it's just cool to see like the momentum just like pick up, and kind of like it's like a snowball effect. And you know, the album comes out, it, like people don't really hear about it, but you start hearing people be like, have you heard the new Charlie XCX album? Like, it's, you know, and Charlie has been putting out music for years. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time I've ever had somebody talk to me about the Charlie XCX album. And it's just interesting to see that, like, because she's had plenty of hits, you know what I mean? And
sure,
been on so many featured songs, but this is the first like sign of mainstream that I've experienced with mm-hmm. Charlie. But the aesthetic of everything is kind of what the driving force behind this was, because it kind of just markets itself.
Yeah, and to add to that, you know, as talent buyers, we're essentially like professional gamblers, right? Where, you know, your original point being, how do you decide what to bring? You know, are there people that are kind of up and coming? And that's the unicorn, right? The unicorn is to find someone that we think isn't huge yet, that mm-hmm. you can kind of get, because that's what it is. You're buying talent, right? That you can get for a smaller price and build an allegiance with them. And then they hit, you know what I mean, 3 months later, and that allegiance is still there and they come back. That's the unicorn, right? Mm-hmm. That we don't really get too often, because it's tough to anticipate. But at the same time, Andrew and I are a good team, because we use our resources to try and make those gambles a little bit more educated, right? So, you know, Andrew booked a band called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard at Water Street a little while back. Mm-hmm. And that was one that we had to gamble some money on, and it was more than we normally had, and we didn't know like how it would do. And that was one that Andrew usually knows more about, you know, what's going on than I do in terms of the music stuff. But that was one that, you know, he talked me into it, and I said, let's do it. And it was our first, you know, sellout that sold out in 2 days.
Wow.
So sometimes it just goes. And now there's other stuff that we talk about that Andrew and I just love, that we listen to on repeat in our car, that how does the world not know about it? And we want to introduce Rochester to it. But that's also a gamble too, because to introduce something new is more difficult than to, you know, have Kamala tweet about it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's the balance that we kind of have to find. We have to, there's stuff we have to bring. That's no-brainers. Like, this is going to do well, mm-hmm. whether we like it or not. And then we have to do our best to help those other ones that should be at that level.
Mm-hmm. Where does this Brad event sort of fall in there? Because it's mostly through this DJ, right? It's DJ mm-hmm. Air. Mm-hmm. That you're talking about kind of something that maybe has a shelf life of this kind of moment that we're in, maybe into the fall, maybe in a little bit to next year. But now we're talking about, oh yeah, is Bratz, you know, are people still as excited? That's interesting, right? Because I bet in the case of this show, that booking just serves people are excited about this right now.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's going back to that feeling, right? We did at Water Street, we did a Taylor Swift dance parties early on. And that was more not to capitalize on Taylor Swift, but it was because we were at a music venue that didn't always cater to, you know, 16 to 24, you know, women. You know what I mean? King Gizzard and like some of our hardcore shows, yes, that does cater to some of them. But there's a lot that wasn't, and there was a hole. So that was something where it's like, yeah, the bar's not going to do great. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not about that necessarily all the time. It's about like this, there's a hole that's being missed. There's an audience that doesn't get to go experience what they want to experience. And we're going to give it a shot. And if only 20 people come out and it's not that big of a deal, we know moving forward. But those Taylor Swift ones did well. And then we saw the idea of this Charlie XCX, same kind of vibe, but completely different, right? Mm-hmm. And making it more of this club vibe. And it was just the right next step. And I think that they capture a similar feeling, right? The two types of things. They're, when you're going to the Taylor Swift dance party or the Charlie XCX club night, it's not about the DJ. It's not about Charlie or Taylor. It's about that feeling that you get when you're with another one of those fans or when you're with someone who dragged along their boyfriend and get them to appreciate it and be involved with it. That's what it's about. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about, Ariel, you mentioned the Brat green turning to a more autumnal amber color. Maybe I wanted to bring up, Charlie XCX spoke to Billboard about those aesthetics and kind of choosing that mushy pea green color. The Billboard cover story reads, inspired by a 1990s neon rave flyer and the title credits to Greg Araki's 2007 comedy Smiley Face, Charlie calls the album's art color actually quite disgusting. And she says she picked it because it sparks a really interesting conversation about desirability. It had to be really unfriendly and uncool, which I do actually think plays a big part of it. It's a particular hue there. But okay, so now we're talking about that color maybe defining the summer. Maybe we can trend forecast a little bit. Ariel, how do you see the fall? I mean, we're talking about Brat. We're talking about potentially Brat lingering into the fall. As far as you can tell, musically, culturally, I mean, what's going to bubble up? You can speak personally or feel free to trend forecast at the highest level if you'd like to.
Oh man, you know, I am curious to see, obviously we're in an election year, which I think for culture often feels like we're all a bit clenched. So I'm very curious to see if the Harris campaign continues to use Brat. I haven't really seen a ton of follow-up. It's not that she's walking on stage to, you know, Girl So Confusing, for example, which is a song off of Brat. So, you know, I think we'll see more of a kind of cheeky tossed off reference to Brat here and there on the wider scale. But I think we're not seeing it become the kind of face of the campaign, like, as I mentioned earlier, like Roar by Katy Perry with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
In terms of trend forecasting, you know, I mean, who's to say, but I feel like for me, summer is all about, you know, electronic music and dancing and being sweaty. And in fall, I like to curl up with a mug of tea and listen to music that is made by guitars. And so I wonder if there's going to be, let's say, you know, like, is MJ Lenderman Brat? Maybe.
Oh, that's a great question. MJ Lenderman, Asheville-based singer-songwriter. His album Manning Fireworks just came out today. It's very good. Very good record. He's also in the band Wednesday. That's a great question. Is MJ Lenderman brat? And in fact, I think a tweet from Charlie coming down on one side or the other of that could really send his album. He could really do some numbers with that. So we'll have to see how that goes. What about for, I mean, and part of the reason why I asked that, does seasonality impact booking? In obviously there's the more predictable ways or of, you know, in terms of travel schedules or, you know, availability, whatever. But yeah, how do you navigate that, Andrew and Riley?
Yeah, big time. We had to learn this over time, right? The summertime is about the dance music, right? Because artists are, the nationally touring artists are generally playing festivals. They're usually playing, right, like, you know, larger stadium. They're on the tour and they're out and about, usually on festival runs. So that Andrew and I have to kind of pivot and be like, what is it? And to Ariel's point, the sweaty dance music is an easy one to get that going. And then, you know, that into fall, colleges are back, right? The students are gone in the summer. Those are the biggest consumers of music that we have. And they get shipped here, you know, every year. And so the fall and winter, it's really about targeting a lot of that. And, you know, I loves me some guitar music, so that's on its way.
It does feel like the music scene at large also does. So that's good. Yes. That could be very good for fall. That could be very promising.
Yes. Yeah. So it's you know, even with Lilac and Party in the Park and stuff, there's a lot of saturation in terms of live music, and we want to offer things that those places don't. We are very aware of what else is going around because we think that it's large enough for everyone to do stuff and not get in each other's ways. And with that, once we get into the fall and winter, those are our strongest months for nationally touring acts. When you get into December, it's a little more difficult because the folks coming from California and Arizona are a little weary about booking Rochester, New York in late December and early January for obvious potential cancellations.
Weather being a big factor. Yes, of
exactly.
Course.
Yep. So we do that. And then spring, again, we kind of do a combo of the both. You know, before the festivals really start going, Andrew and I try to make our gambles on what artists are going to be at the festivals before they are announced and try and get them before they start, and then start getting the club shows and the sweaty dance music going again. And mm-hmm. that's the cycle that we do. And if we can land, a Jadakiss in the middle of summer, we're still going to go for it. But, you know, that's kind of how we do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like Riley was saying, we have to lean into, like, more local events in the winter because bands stop touring as much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from September until early December and then picks up again March through the end of summer, we're sending out plenty of offers for routing dates to get, like, bands that are passing through, possibly bands that are too big to typically play Rochester who will play like New York City or like Nashville on a Friday, Saturday. Mm-hmm. They could play Rochester on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and we welcome them because otherwise Rochester just gets skipped over and they either play Buffalo or Toronto. And we're trying to, you know, shed light on how great this arts and music community is in Rochester. And we think that people, you know, like Rochester has always had like bands coming through, mm-hmm. but I feel like in recent years it's kind of fallen off because of the lack of venues to play, and so we're just trying to, you know, constantly like bring awareness that Rochester is a great music community.
Yeah, that's just an interesting point about the venue thing. I think that actually I have a lot more questions on that. Maybe we can talk about that, and maybe we'll save that for a future show, because I think that's kind of an ongoing issue that we can maybe talk about. But yeah, I appreciate that perspective. We have a few more minutes. I think before we wrap up, and maybe a good way to wrap up is sharing. We've been talking a lot about music. We've been talking about entering fall. Is there a key song, a key artist that's on your fall playlist right now? Maybe I can start because it feels rude to go last. I definitely, and maybe not to steal your thunder, Ariel, but I have been heavily listening to the MJ Lenderman record, which I very much recommend for fans of Neil Young or Magnolia Electric Company or many different folk-tinged, slightly country-ish rock musicians. I feel like that is very good fall music. So, but what about for you, Ariel?
Yeah, well, I just want to say that I was just had Twitter open in a tab, and I saw, actually just DM this to you, Patrick, that somebody said, posted a picture of MJ Lenderman's billboard and said, the brat wall is down. The MJ Lenderman billboard rises, signaling the changing of the seasons.
Oh my gosh. couldn't be more perfect.
So definitely Mr. Lenderman. I also really love another British artist, Nila Ferjanya, has a new record that's coming out next week. I believe it drops on Friday the 13th, very auspiciously.
Cool.
But that record is, like a lot of her records, a really great like pop rock record. It has a lot of really propulsive guitar music that almost sounds electronic. It's almost sounds looped. So, and I find her voice to be very soothing. So I definitely recommend checking that out if you want maybe a slower off ramp from Brat.
Cool. And then Andrew and Riley, quickly, what is on your fall playlists?
Going into the acoustic guitar, I'm a big fan of Nashville's Gabe Lee. Gabe Lee is great. He's up and coming, and more people need to listen to him. And also Red Clay Strays from Mobile, Alabama have been really tearing it up. They're ones that you can still kind of maybe catch at a smaller venue, but you won't be able to for long.
Not for much longer. Okay, cool. What about you, Andrew?
I got to say Chapel Roan right now.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, her latest single, Good Luck, Babe, classic. Yeah, got it on repeat. Doesn't really get old. And her last record, phenomenal. So
yeah, that's another. I feel like we could do a whole other hour about Chapel Roan,
too,
especially
to
when we talk about. Yeah, that's true. We're lining them up for the future. Yeah. But yeah, that's another artist I feel like who certainly, when you talk about the cultural impact of the year, Chapel Roan's a big one. So yeah, I think Good Luck, Babe is a pretty terrific song as well. I feel like that's probably going to end up probably in my personal top five of the year. I think some Brat tracks would, one or two. Well, I don't know, probably just one, but certainly that MJ Lenderman album. But yeah, but okay. Well, thank you all for your perspective so much. I want to thank my guests in talking about all things Brat Summer. Andrew Natoli and Riley Fressi are the owners of the Upstate Music Group and talent buyers at Music Venue Essex, among others. And I want to thank Arielle Gordon, music writer. You can read her really great essay, Brat Summer is Dead, Long Live Brat Summer, at Pitchfork. She writes there a lot of other places. Thank you all so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. This is Connections. Thank you so much for listening to member-supported public radio.